two other divisions tomorrow or the next day. So we are anticipating that in this delegation there are people that will be able to respond to all matters legal and all matters investigation and enforcement and that type of areas. As part of our preparing for our report that we must submit to Parliament by the end of this week. We'll allow you to introduce yourselves, but we did send a notification to you on the 14th with the type of areas that you can anticipate members will want to engage in, as well as matters that are outstanding from this time last year that we maybe want to discuss, as well as matters that we pick up on our various oversight visits. So it's the whole gamut. Stuff that was outstanding last year, stuff in the annual report, and stuff that we pick up in our oversight visits and or correspondence that we receive from JOSOP out in the public and also sometimes officials. So it's really an open discussion around all these matters on both legal and on the DIU stroke enforcement side of it. I'm not sure who's going to go first, but whoever it is, we will give you about 45 minutes to do a presentation. We'll then engage on it as the committee and move on to the next one, and do the same thing. Hopefully by 1 o'clock we should be able to be out of here. I'm informed that you've got an overhead, or you could talk to it. If you don't want to take it on the overhead, it's really up to you, but I'll look at members. I'm not sure if members want them to talk to the reporters, to the go to the overhead. As far as I'm concerned, it's 45 minutes, however they do it, and we will then take it from there. So I'm getting an indication from members that they're not fussing. Whether you want to do it on the overhead projector or if you just want to talk to it, it's fine. It's just about the time frames that we will be concerned about, and then we'll open it up for discussion. So I'm going to hand over to yourselves, the leader of the delegation, so that you can introduce yourselves to us so that we know who we're talking to on our side. Two members are doing the same thing in another committee. In fact, all the members that aren't here, Baban Dobu, I think, is with SAPS as we speak. Mr. Abram and Paliso are with agriculture. And Mamnyanda is sick. So there's about four or five members that are not here. But those of us that are here must continue with the business of the day. So that's from our side. I'll hand over to the leader of the delegation, then you can introduce your team or allow them to introduce themselves and just get straight into the business of presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you, sir. My name is Matume Malachi. I'm the Director, Departmental Investigation Unit. I'm also acting in the capacity of Deputy Commissioner, Legal and Special Operations. I'm going to allow the members of the delegation from the Chief Directorate, Legal and Special Operations, as well as HR. We also have from the Commissioner's Office, the DC Executive Management, as well as a representative from the Deputy Minister's Office. Thank you.
Just before you move, you say you're acting legal. What has happened to the legal individual? Has he moved on? Or I'm sure there was a permanent legal person the last time we were around. Can you just explain the acting part?
The post became vacant in January 2009. when the person resigned, moved on.
Maybe I'm somebody is educating me. The directorate is you saying special or whatever it is, but under that you have legal. I'm saying who is where does the buck stop when it comes to legal matters? We recall that at one point we had a discussion with I think it was Mbuli or somebody like that. Is Mr. Mbuli around? It's yourself. What is your role, sir? You're the director of legal services, and you report to who looks after legal and everything else. Okay. So we've got a director legal, and we've got a director DIU type of thing, I'm assuming. And they will all then report to you. Oh, no, then it's fine. Okay. I withdraw my question then. I thought you were... All right. Is that clear to the members?
Yeah.
All right.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Peter Killian. I'm the Deputy Director of Sanctions in the Directorate of Code Enforcement. I'm standing in for Mr. Carl Pecht and Mr. Director of Code Enforcement, but he's unfortunately not here today.
Good morning. I'm the director. I'm Ruben Mbuli, Director of Legal Services.
Good morning. I'm Thabo Thongwane, Director of HR Planning.
Good morning. I am Kuku Lembete. I am currently acting CDC Corporate Services.
Good morning, all. I'm Lucky Tekisho, DC, Employee Relationship.
Good morning, I'm Sibongile Hlongwane, representing Minister of Office.
Good morning, I'm Sam Maboja, representing Deputy Minister's Office.
Good morning, I'm Terence Rasaroka, Deputy Commissioner, Executive Management.
My name is Pico Mbambo. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for intergovernmental relations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our friends from the media. We are dealing with the legal people and the special investigations people today. Well, I say special investigations, internal investigations people and HR around their annual report. And tomorrow we'll be dealing with the IT people. So it's part of our preparations for our budget review report so that those in the media understand what it's all about. So we'll hand over to you, sir, for your presentation, and then we will start the engagement.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have prepared about 13 slides just to take you through the operations in the Chief Directorate, Legal and Special Operations. I'll start over with a background. In 2002, Cabinet resolved that all departments should have minimum anti-corruption capacities within their domains. Subsequent to that, DCS approved a three-pronged anti-corruption strategy. Then the Chief Directorate, Legal and Special Operations, was subsequently established. That was in 2003. The mandate with which it operates, in terms of the Correctional Services Act, we have Section 95, capital A, and Section 95, capital B. The 95A authorizes the National Commissioner to put in place a structure that must investigate fraud, corruption, and serious maladministration in the department. So in terms of Section 95, capital letter B, in the same manner that he establishes a structure to investigate, the National Commissioner must also establish a structure that must prosecute on matters of fraud, corruption, and serious maladministration within the department.
We will move on to the post establishment. There is a slide. This is our organogram. We have the Chief Directorate Legal and Special Operations with three directorates. The one directorate is Departmental Investigation Unit, referred to as the DIU. We have Code Enforcement Unit. Then we have Legal Services. The director DIU is myself, Malachi. Then Code Enforcement Unit, we have Director Carol Paxton. We have Dr. Mbuli as the Director, Legal Services. You will notice that there are, here we just tabled the staff complement. How many posts do we have and which levels are they? You will see DIU has got two deputy directors and about 15 assistant directors. Code Enforcement has two deputy directors. It has got about six assistant directors. These two components are centralized at head office. They don't have any representativity at regional or management areas. Then we move on to Legal Services. There is one director I've already mentioned. Then we have seven senior legal admin officers. We have two legal admin officers, one ASD. Then we will have admin support in all these three directories. The budget allocations, we haven't had any problems with budget. We have always had sufficient funds to carry out the operations that we intended to carry. The amounts listed in red would reflect the commitments that are there. The far column on your right, the far right column, represents the actual expenditure, the commitment that is listed in red, and the total that has been spent by respective directorates. Then the most important part is the one that follows on caseload. The next slide, Mr. Mbam. Yes, this one. We have worked this slide from 2008-2009, just to give a perspective of case flow. How many cases do we receive? How many do we manage to handle in a year's time? And what happens to the backlogs? In the first year, which is 2008-2009, you will see the backlog was 189. When the next financial year starts, that will be 2009-2010. It means we had 181 cases as at the 1st of April 2009 and 2010. Adding with the cases that were reported in that specific year of 2009-10, then we had 258 cases. I'm sorry, the 258 refers to concluded investigations. Then the first column refers to cases that were handled. When you subtract the middle one, you get the backlog that was there as at the end of the financial year. In this six midterm period, we just indicated as well what transpired in this year, that we handled 298 cases, 150 were concluded, then there is a backlog as we speak of 148 cases. Let's move to the next slide. This one is just showing the flow of the cases as well as the backlog. It's still the same information that is contained in the previous slide. Then we move on to disciplinary matters. You'll see there that during the year 2008-09, we had 61 cases appearing before disciplinary hearings, then concluding 39, 21 was the pending or the backlog from that year. 2009-10, 45 cases were handled by the Directorate Code Enforcement. The hearings that were concluded, 109. You'll notice there that 45 cases in which 109 officials were being disciplined. So there shouldn't be confusion about why is 45 now 109 officials being disciplined. One case can result in the disciplinary case or hearing of many officials. 2010-2011, 45 cases, 113 officials have been disciplined and those hearings were concluded. And as we speak, 40 disciplinary hearings, that was in 2010-2011. Then the last part reflects this financial year, the first 6 months of the financial year, where 103 cases were handled, then 115 were concluded. We have pending as 38. This slide reflects the outcome of the disciplinary hearings. You'll see the total cases handled of 115 in the first 6 months. 105 officials were charged, 103 were found guilty with the sanctions reflected as written warning 3, final written warning 71, suspension without salary 14, dismissal, 15 officials were dismissed and 2 were acquitted. 9 cases were withdrawn and 1 person resigned. The success rate as we speak is 98.09%. The challenges that we are facing, we started with DIU and court enforcement. We indicated there that we are centralized. We don't have representativity in the region, but that was done for a specific purpose as these structures were established. We say insufficient capacity affect the operations. We would like to conclude more investigations and discipline more officials, but with the limited capacity, we end up with backlogs. We say the risk profile of the department on matters of corruption and fraud is not commensurate with this capacity, but safe to mention that HR is looking into beefing it up. Sooner or later, we'll have a changed capacity in the fight against fraud and corruption. Then we have legislative mandates where investigators do not have powers to request records from banks, from cell phone companies when you are investigating fraud and corruption. But we do it through SAPs, which result in prolonging the process of investigation. They have been of much assistance, SAPs and SIU, in that regard. We are going to attend to amend our act in order to include or to enable internal investigators also to approach courts directly and request 205 authorizations. Then on the part of legal services, legal services here, I'm referring to a directorate legal services. We also have insufficient capacity there. We are experiencing a problem with OSD, occupation-specific dispensation regime, that is making it very difficult to fill the posts of legal admin officers. More light will be shed during the deliberations around how that affects the decisions to appoint officials in legal services. I think that is the few slides we prepared for the document that we have submitted here for engagement today. Thank you, Chair. All right. That is the presentation. I note myself. I note everybody that wants to speak. Let me just kick off from a clarity point of view, because I'm not sure that I was following what you were doing. Let me refer you to the annual report, for instance, on page 223. I'm not sure if you have the annual report. And it talks about types of misconduct at disciplinary hearings. And it goes from A all the way to double M. And it's got 4,247 as number. And I'm not sure which slide you have, but I'm sure when I was looking at your slides, I didn't see that type of number on any of your slides. You were talking about 200 cases, 184 cases, and so on. That is why I'm saying let's just get clarity first before we go anywhere. Yeah, if you look at that one. Take the 2010-2011, because that's the financial year we're working on. You had outstanding the previous year 40, you received 45, so that's about 85 cases. And we're not talking about officials, we're just talking about cases, it's about 85. What does this 4247 represent in the annual report? I thought that was the cases that it represented. Have you got the annual report in front of you? Yes. What does that 4247 represent?
Sir, it represents all cases of misconduct in the department, all, regardless of categories. What was presented here is cases that would fall under the mandate of Section 95A and B, which is fraud, corruption, and serious maladministration. But this number would include even those line function issues, sleeping on duty, arriving late, all what have you, assault on other officials or inmates, you know.
Okay, just on that one. You've got sleeping on duty 50, all right, on that page. If you take your cases, you've got about 90 cases that you've got in 2011. Just sleeping on duty in this annual report shows 50, and I would assume sleeping on duty can only be officials. While on duty is under the influence of intoxicating, illegal, unauthorized, habit-forming, and or stupefying drugs, 110. If you just take those two, that gives us 150. Are we now talking about 150 incidents? That's what I'm trying to understand, because your 45 doesn't reconcile with what is in the annual report. That's all that I'm trying to understand. If you look at the annual report, 50 individuals slept on duty. Were caught sleeping on duty. That's what I'm talking about. Yes, were caught sleeping on duty. 110 came in there with drugs or alcohol or whatever. Were caught, yes. No, it's fine. Were caught. Were caught. And I'm just trying to look at those that are dealing with officials. Failing to carry out a lawful order, I suppose that could be inmate as well, but sexual harassment, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm not understanding You're 45. I if it's 45, I'm happy. But then the annual report is giving us a very gloomy picture of more than 45. I'm just trying to understand that thing that says number in there, in the annual report, what does that represent? On page 222, for instance. Let's take sleeping on duty, the T. It says 50, and it says percentage total 1.17. What does 50 represent?
It represents the total number of officials. That's right.
So 50 represents, now let's go back to your slide. Your slide is saying that you had hearings for 113 officials. No, the slide is on the thing there. You say you have hearings concluded were 113, all right? But if we take your example that 50 relates to officials, then the question that we must ask is that 113, what is that as a percentage of the total number of officials? Because we can go through the slide, and I mean through this page, and pick up the number of officials. Let's assume of that 4,200, even if only 50% were officials and the rest were inmates. Of the 2,000, why are there only 113 hearings that have been concluded? Are you understanding? Are we understanding you? Because we're clearly not talking the same language here. I'm being conservative. 4,247 is the total. I'm saying let's assume only 50% of those were officials, which is about 2,000 officials. If you look at 2010, 2011, my understanding is that you've only concluded hearings that involved 113 officials. My question then is, are we saying that there's 113 of the 2,000 that are still on backlog and are still waiting to be heard? Because my next question is going to be, how do you deal with the 30-day suspension and the 30-day DC hearing? It's a mess if you guys are not able to explain it to us. I'll sit here debating with you the whole day until we understand what's going on here. Can you explain that to us?
Chairperson,
maybe just
Chairperson, there's a point of order, or a point of clarity with regard to your input. According to this document, type of misconduct, according to my knowledge, misconduct can only be constituted by officials. This does not include any inmates. It's 100% officials. Is that correct?
Yes. Let's go to page 222 on your annual report. If it's only officials, that 4,000, is it 4,000 officials? 4,000 officials for the year. 113 officials are those that you've concluded for that year. No. Yeah?
I just need to clarify. These are the number of cases concluded by this capacity, the minimum anti-corruption capacity, which are the two structures that are there. Then that 113 will be added with all the cases in the department to come to this 4,247.
I am saying, who is dealing with the others? If you're only dealing with 113, according to your capacity, who is dealing with that? Is that just a normal line function manager that is dealing with it? Okay.
Correct.
No, that's fine. We just wanted to get that clarity. Can you then indicate on this page which ones, or let's put it differently, how do you decide what managers must handle and how do you decide what you must handle? Sleeping on duty, for instance, is that a manager responsibility? Is that your responsibility? Bringing drugs into the facility, is it a manager responsibility? Is it your responsibility? Or is it arbitrary? How do we distinguish which ones go away?
As a principle, discipline is a line function management responsibility. That is the starting point. We provide a support service with regard to cases of fraud and corruption because there are those that are complex, there are those that they can still by themselves as line function handle. If you look at item I on the annual report, you'll see that the issues of theft, bribery, fraud, corruption, or a combination thereof. Then there is a number indicating the S172, meaning that 113 is in that 172.
combined with matters that would have been handled by line function. We are just a support service providing support to line function management.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just arising directly from this, and thanks for that clarity because it's very important. This, as I understand it, report deals only with theft, fraud, and serious maladministration that cannot be dealt with on a center level. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. And you say then that you got a 98.09% success rate by finding 103 out of 115 officials guilty of theft, fraud, and serious maladministration. Is that correct? And of that, 15 officials were dismissed. That's slightly better than 10% of them. The point I want to make here is you have gone to a lot of trouble. You've got a whole directorate dealing with theft, fraud, and serious maladministration. You prosecute 115 officials. You find 98.09% of them guilty, and you dismiss 15 of them. What kind of message is that sending out about the seriousness of the department in dealing with theft, fraud, and serious maladministration?
Before you answer, as you answer that one, please answer, Mr. Self, the kind of sanctions that you're giving. I mean, if it, there's only those few that have been...
Information is there. It's
is it there?
Final written warnings and written warnings and...
All right. Okay. In providing an answer, I cannot say we are very proud about the rate at which we dismiss people who committed fraud and corruption. We are working toward an improved picture. If you look at it, this time last year, it was not the same as this year. There is a great deal of improvement on people that must be dismissed. The same will apply to the rate at which we conclude disciplinary processes, especially at SMS level. You'll also note that 14 officials were given suspension without a pay as an alternative to dismissal. In other words, had we gone for fully fledged dismissal, we would be talking about 29. But the chairpersons who are independent in the hearings decided to give an alternative to dismissal sanctions. And although we preach, we do preach a message of zero tolerance to the people who are chairing our disciplinary panels. But once a person has arrived at a decision, unless you are able to prove that there was malice or there was undue influence, we are not able to take them on as a department. We can't appeal against our own chairperson. That is the predicament we are facing, but we hope to improve with time. As I've already indicated, that this year, this time, the dismissals are more than what we have done the whole of last year. So we are working on it, sir.
Now, Chair, I just need your guidance. Are we asking questions around all the documents that we were given last night? Okay. All right. Can I then just deal with some other matters? In the presentation, a lot was made of insufficient capacity to deal with this thing. I just want to know what the department is doing, for example, to encourage internships or to recruit legal graduates, because every year the universities produce hundreds of legal graduates who can't find jobs. And I just want to know whether there's a strategy in place for dealing with that. Secondly, can I just deal with litigation? Now, If you analyze the figures that you provided us for litigation, you will see that there are claims that have been brought against the department in this from the 1st of April 2010 until the 31st of March 2011, in other words, last financial year, amounting to 34.7 million rand, as I understand it, 37 million rand. And of that, 34.7 million rand, just about half, relate to assault, unlawful detentions, and pain and suffering. In other words, what I'm keen to know from the department is, what are these claims by offenders against the department for assault, for unlawful detention, for pain and suffering, are they all contained in that amount? And secondly, I would be very keen to know, there's a further nearly a million rands worth of claims relating to rape and sexual harassment. And I would be very keen to get the details of the three cases, the three claims that relate to rape and sexual harassment. Was it offender against, you know, where did these claims arise from?
Why don't you respond to those first?
All right, can I just,
okay,
just on one further aspect, he says, the evaluation of the above, those are the figures, clearly indicates that alleged negligence by the department's officials play an important role in the causes of claims relating to motor vehicle accidents, which is another claim. What I would also be very keen to know is what consequences there were for negligent officials who caused claims against the department. Thank you, Chair.
Sir, before I hand over to Dr. Mbuli to address the issues that you have tabled, I just needed to indicate that mostly it's assaults on inmates by officials, those claims that you have asked about. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I answer the direct question, I want to point out that the information on page 193 of the annual report refers to contingency claims. In other words, Chairperson, it may include letters of demand which have not culminated into an actual claim in a court of law, number one. Number two, it may relate to a case where summons have been issued. So those cases are at that stage. Every year, like now, right about this time of the year, we check which claims which came in a form of letter of demand are being pursued. And then if it is not being pursued, if it's prescribed, we delete it, and then the figure goes down, right? And then if summons were issued, and then we pursue it with the claimant to find out whether he's giving us particulars of claim, he's prosecuting the claim until it is finalized. In other words, there is a vast difference between this, what you see on paper here, and an actual case that is pending in court. Because this is contingency, we enable the finance branch of the department to budget for this in the unlikely event that we are taken to court successfully. We are not in any way admitting that they will successfully bring us to court, because we are ready to defend where there is a bona fide defense. So that's the main thing. We get a number of questions on this. They confuse contingency claims and actual claims. Right. So these are cases that are there. When it comes to the assaults, alleged assaults, I must add, these are alleged assaults against inmates by officials.
Mr. Bully, I hear what you're saying. Let us take this process and assist you. Let's go back to that page. You see, your third column says liabilities paid, cancelled, reduced during the year, the 85 million. Would you pay it? I'm saying, when you pay it, is that supposedly because there's a case against you? In that column, I hear the contingency.
Yes.
What is that third column representing? Because if that column is representing the cost to the department, then let's focus on that and then you answer, Mr. Thoreau. What was the cost to the department on this matter?
Chairperson, let me just add. That column you're referring to, it says liabilities paid / cancelled / reduced during the year. It does not only refer to the pay. We have never paid that money. What happens is, if it has prescribed, you see a person writes a letter to the department.
What have you paid? It's a very simple question. What have you paid?
Well, I don't have the actual figure here. Because even if I, in the financial year, in the report that I have on litigation now, finalized claims, I can answer that without now relying on that. Because in the actual cases finalized, I'm reading from the risk report. Let me see. Claims, according to this, we've paid zero from the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter. We paid zero. Yeah, this is 2010, 2011 financial year. We paid zero. Reason? Okay, I can see here. Yeah, there's nothing.
So you are saying to this committee that there's been no successful charge. If you paid nothing.
Look, I must correct myself really quick. Yeah. You see, in the second quarter of 2010, 2011, I've got two against. Right? Only two against. I don't have the actual figure here. I can get it later. But otherwise, we didn't pay anything. I've got it here. It's factual. This is the claims now. Oh, the arbitrations, those were finalized. Arbitration referred to members of staff, human resource matters, when a person is reinstated, etc., etc. There are some losses on our part. But if I check again, the success is there. Those were finalized in the first quarter in favor of DCS 53. Finalized 53 against DCS 17 and in favor 36. That is the first quarter. Second quarter, we lost one and then we won one. And then third quarter, we won 18, we lost 6, etc. So those are human resource. This employment of staff. So, in other words, if you read the actuals, the actual claims that that we face as DCS, and then you compare it with page 192 of the annual report, you can see that my statement to say those are contingent, not actual claims, is correct, because I've got the figures of the finalized, not pending, and then you can calculate them and then you check them. Even the office of the Auditor General did visit our offices to check. We are not aware that they were unhappy. Right.
Please go to, still on this matter, go to your annual report, page 37. A3. It says total number of cases finalized 200. In favor of DCS 153 against DCS 47, and he talks around litigation again on those matters. What is that representing? Is that a different litigation to what you've been talking about? Because you seem to be saying to us that there was no litigation against the department. The annual report talks about 47. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I'm checking also against my record here. That appears to be correct, Jefferson, because the large figure of the cases finalized refers to human resource matters, where a staff member takes us on, which is not, it's not disputed. Against is 47, which is 23.5%, but in favor is 76.5%, that's correct.
I think the question that we are asking, let's put it simply to you. Your department is supposed to protect the assets of, or your unit is supposed to protect the assets of the department as far as possible. Your unit, in terms of giving legal advice. the question that we are asking, how much did it cost the department this financial year that we're dealing with on legal matters? How much did it cost the department? Our next question is, if it cost the department 10 rand on legal matters, what advice did you give to the managers? Because if you gave them advice that says, don't do X, it's going to cost the department, and they went ahead and did it, then we need to call them to order. Because that's your role. Your role is to protect us from losing money. The question Mr. Self is asking, and if you don't have it now, it's fine. We will find ways of getting it. Did this department lose money because of a legal challenge against it? Whether it is an inmate, whether it is your own official, whether it is a pedestrian. Did the department face, or did the department have to pay? And if it had to pay, we'd want to know the circumstances, because our follow-up question is, what did you do about it as the legal person in terms of advising the department? Some of them we might have just lost because we lost them. But we can't lose them because of negligence from the manager. You don't give him advice, and it costs the taxpayer money. That is the question Mr. Self is asking.
Thank you, Chair. I won't have the exact figures, but the total number of cases I've said, I've got the information here, that were finalized, we didn't win 100% as a department, because some cases, mostly arbitrations, were not winnable, because there was non-compliance here and there. They were non-winnable. But as a legal department, we gave legal advice where we are, and then today, I've got some percentages here per quarter, how we succeeded. We are not proud to lose even a single case. If I lose a single case, I worry. The intent is to win everything. But then we managed, first quarter 69.7%, there's a success rate, because many cases were pending, we're starting in the financial year. Second quarter, we managed to achieve a success rate of 76.62%. Third quarter, 76.3. The third quarter, 75.56. In legal circles, this is not bad, because we can't win everything. We just can't win everything. That's not what we wish. We want to win everything. In some cases, it is not possible. I think the department, to a certain extent, is complying with the applicable policies, rules, but obviously cannot achieve 100%. We wish that it should be 100%. Because of the success rate, as I've indicated in the percentages here, it means there is room for improvement. As long as it is not 100%, Jefferson, it means we must still improve to strive for 100%. We give it our best shot, and that's it. And the actual figures on human resource matters, because I can't give you the figure, we can look it up later, but it is in the form of salary. Thank you.
Sorry. You know, with the greatest respect, this is not a sort of rugby league that we're talking about winning 100% of the games. What we are dealing, I mean, we know, for example, we know that assault takes place in prisons. We know it takes place. And we know that inmates bring cases against the department for assault. And it now becomes a question of you've got to win the case. Winning the case isn't what it's about. Delivering justice is what it's about, actually. And I'm concerned that what happens, and the reason that you paid out nothing, is that you've got the services of the state attorney, and the average inmate's got the services of legal aid. That's why you get to pay out nothing. Just on the subject of paying out and legal advice, may I also ask you about last year's report, and that when you came here last year, and you gave some advice to the department around the case that was being brought about Royal Sachaba. And you said that notwithstanding certain legal advice that was given to the department at that time, you were going to oppose Royal Sachaba's claim. And I note that there's nothing in this report that relates to what is happening to that particular case. And I would very much like details on that too.
I would like to address the other questions. Chairperson, that if you take into account your arbitrations for the amount on your documentation, if you look at 2009-2010, then you had 306 arbitrations, and for 2010-2011, 471. It increases. Correct? It's an increase. There was an increase. An increase of more or less more than 170. 165. So it's an indication that you know, arbitrations is a result of your labor relations, your management. So, and I saw also here on your last page your recommendations how to decrease arbitrations. So what has been done so far to address this particular issue, and what is the reason really for this drastic increase in arbitrations?
Thank you. I can start with Mr. Selfs, because not all the questions were answered. Particularly on the, you indicated, it's true that these claims come out of assaults, claims for a wrongful detention, as well as the driving part of things. We don't know, or let me rather rephrase, that for you to take on an official of government who was involved in a motor collision, that person must have forfeited state car. He must be found to have been reckless with no authorization or driving under the influence. The other part to that, they may be sober-minded, but the fleet itself is very old and dilapidated. So those are some of the areas that are troubling us with regard to claims. You find you don't have a defense, you must settle. But internally, we must also workshop, instill a sense of responsibility in our officials. Because when it is said you are not forfeiting state cover, it does not necessarily mean you could not have avoided the accident. You could have avoided it. But it's a predicament we are in with regard to assault specifically. They come out, the highest place where we experience them is St. Albans. We have requested our legal services in the region to conduct some workshops on how to use reasonable force when dealing with inmates. I'm not in a position to say whether there is improvement on how they behave or it is still the same. But it is a challenge that we have also, we are aware of, that we need to improve more. We need to sensitize our officials on improving in dealing with the inmates. So coming to your issue of arbitrations, they are also increasing. We operate in a highly industrialized environment. It's one of those government departments where people understand their rights, they question everything. Important, crucial to this issue of arbitration is, or it relates to the role of management
in directing and controlling operations within this respective structures of the department. Once a person feels I'm not being treated fairly, it's going to question you. If be it about appointment, promotion, and this is the area where we experience a lot of this high rise in arbitration. Where there is explicit policy and managers choose not to abide or follow it, we have adopted an approach that says we will hold managers responsible. We call it management culpability, meaning that management was supposed to behave in a certain direction, but they did not, in which event we are incurring costs, then they must answer why disciplinary steps should not be taken against them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I want to respond on the payout because the question was, we are successful because the people who sue us do not have access to medical aid. I just want to allay
legal aid.
Sorry, slip of a tongue. English is foreign to me. Right, legal aid. Let me just inform this House, Chair. Most of the assaults from St. Albans are prosecuted by an attorney of repute. I normally get the impression that, rightly or wrongly, this firm of attorney, they specialize with work for DCS. We know if a case of an alleged assault comes from St. Albans, the name of the attorney will appear there. And they fight their case. So the scales are balanced in my view because they are properly represented and we fight back. Obviously, we don't just fight. I mean, we first check whether the department has got a case here. If the department does not have a case, well, there are few, very few, where you'll say, okay, there was a violation by our official. There are very few. But where they doubt, an inmate comes and say, I'm claiming 5 million or 500,000. And there's just no evidence to support that. Obviously, we will say, support your claim. And then unless you can support your claim and convince us and the state attorney, the advocate, then obviously we are going to dispute it. Not because we are cruel, but because we cannot just be paying out simply because somebody is alleging assault. Because there are many that take chances. There's one guy here, I think we have seen it in this contingency claim, who submitted a claim for 900 million rand. He issued someone for that matter. And then he didn't go further than issuing the summons. Then we said, okay, let's meet halfway. Come and prosecute your claim. He has not done so. The matter is still appearing on that page 193. It's still appearing. One guy, he issued someone, but he can't move because we are just ready to rumble, so to say. There is just no case. Where there is a case, we are not going to waste time. And we are not abusing state resources. Where there is a case, fine, we can recommend settlement. Where there is no case, we'll defend to the best of our ability. Right.
Mr. Mbuli, just before you carry on, so that we put this thing to bed, this 193. I accept because we asked the auditors. The contingent.
Yes. Come again.
I'm saying that contingent liability of 1 billion. We asked the auditors. No, you don't have to go to it. We've asked the auditors, and they said, as you are indicating, not money that have been paid, but financial rules suggest that they must do it if there's even a letter of it. And we can accept that. The question we're asking you is to go back and give us as accurate as possible guesstimation of how much of that 1.3 billion rand you think ultimately we're going to pay. I know we're reflecting it there because the sense that, let's put it this way, we were concerned with the large amount of money. in our discussions with you, it almost sounds as if we are ready to take on most cases. When I say we, I'm saying the department, and we've got a case against them. What we want to know is, of that money, if you could indicate to us how much of that money do you think ultimately we're going to pay? Because I think that is it. So that you don't have to, if you can do it now, it's fine. If you can't, it's fine. Because then that will put us to rest. We're just concerned with the billion rand that possibly could be paid out. Of course, some of it will prescribe, some of it will whatever, but you must give us some warm, fuzzy feeling. Because, I mean, there's things like death in detention, motor accidents, and all those types of things. If you feel these are all chance takers, indicate that to us so that we can then feel a bit warmer about it, especially on the contingent liabilities. Do you have a figure for us?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I cannot give it now. My team that is working on these figures is finalizing this report on Thursday this week. We have not yet submitted to our branch finance. So after that, we'll be in a position to eliminate those that have prescribed. And we'll have some information on this 900 million, which is just hanging in the way. So we can do it later, Chair, after those finalized figures.
Right.
Thank you. Honorable Sechaba, if you will recall, Chair, last year, around about October, it was October last year, October 13th, 13th, yes, I was here. I said the hearing was going to take place on the 7th and 8th February 2011, before a judge. That's exactly what happened, Chair. We were in court in the North House. I was sitting at the back, listening attentively. No? I was there in court. The advocates were getting at each other. It was an interesting argument. I won't get into that. I've got the heads of arguments with me, which I read this morning just to refresh my memory because I'm getting old. Now, what happened at the end of the hearing, Chair? The judge was presiding reserved judgment. That judgment remained reserved. We are waiting. That tender, according to the information, it expires end of January. That judgment won't come on time, it looks like. I'm not sure. It may come tomorrow. But it looks like. But now, what is interesting, without reopening an argument on the merits and whatever, the applicant in that matter changed what's called the relief sort. In other words, what he wanted the court to do. I won't waste your time by reading. I've got it here. Now, when the lawyers were getting at each other in court, now in the heads of argument of the applicant, that is Royal Sechaba, Royal Sechaba abandoned the idea that they should be declared a successful bidder. They simply asked the court to declare the award of the tender to the third respondent to set it aside, and their disqualification to be set aside, and then order the department to re-advertise, because in their argument they said it won't serve any purpose to ask the court to award the case to them, or to ask the reconstituted bid adjudication committee to re-enter the matter. So, we are waiting for the judgment. I don't want to speculate. That's not my nature. But that's what finally they asked. Obviously, the other two respondents said no, it must just be rejected.
Okay. Let's the specifics. It was Prosasa against Rayo Sichab. It was about the food.
Yeah,
When does that food tender come to an end? The current one. Do you have an idea?
It's end of January, if not the coming year, 2012. That's right.
Okay. All right. So even if they had set it aside, they would have set it aside for less than a year, in other words. If they were successful, it would have. I'm saying the period that the contract has to run is from today until about 2012 January. 2012, we'll take a decision whether you're going to renew it, retender, or convince us otherwise. Is that what it is? Okay, that's fine. So it's 8 months to go on that tender. Right. Anybody else want to follow up on Royal Sechaba? Royal Sechaba. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to know that what plan are the department having if the contract is going to be finished on 2012. You'll remember that always this contract chair is always come to us under pressure on the department to say this tender now is finished and we are not yet ready in terms of the feeding the inmate, that who's going to cook for the inmate. Nothing, there's no program that is on place in terms of that. So I want to know from the department that if they know that the contract is going to end 2012, what program do they have after that? Are we going to get another story to say we are extending the contract? Because that's why we can't deal with this problem. Because there's no plan that the department always make in terms of the situation of this tender of
Thank you. Right. You don't have to respond if you don't want to, because I know it's going to be a you are the legal and investigating. But if you want to respond to it, it's fine. If you don't respond to it, I think what we do, Mam Gwenya, is because it's a serious one. We then can correspond directly with the department, because this is not the department in terms of the top leadership. This is just certain sections. If you want to attempt a response, it's fine. But Cindy will note your one, ma'am, and we will do the necessary before the end of the day.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to indicate that we will take the question back to management, not to speculate here and unsound things that may not be correct. But we will take it back to management, then the appropriate response will be furnished to you in writing.
We're also looking at both the Minister and the Deputy Minister's office. So that you can take the sentiment that we can't have a situation. We all know now that you've got 8 months before this thing expires or finishes off. It'll be very difficult for us to accept an argument when you come back and say to us, well, the pressure's against us, we have to do it. It's going to be difficult because you've got fair warning. I think that's the sentiment that you would need to send. I see you want to say something else. Around this one, before you do, do you want to talk on the same episode? Okay, let members speak on it so that you guys get the total sentiment and you can go and report to your various principals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Sorry for everything. I know, Chairperson, that this is the section and the legal of the department. But indeed, I felt that I had to ask this question because seemingly it's getting more and more and more, the issue of Western Cape.
That's a new topic, right? We'll get there. We're not closing it. We just wanted to close the Royal Sechaba one.
Okay.
Just that one, we'll come back to you. You wanted to say something on Royal Sechaba, ma'am, and the sentiments that we are asking you to express to your various principals.
Yes, Chairperson. There is a process of doing readiness assessment for all the areas in the region to check how ready they are to take over the function. But we will give you a proper report. But this is just to assure members that there is work that is being done on this matter. Thank you.
All right, we can move on now. Sechaba is done, litigation is done. Baba Makaku, you can come with your one.
Yes, mine is the issue of the Western Cape. You know that the Western Cape we know that the Western Cape Seniors Official, they write the letter to the department for not being satisfied about the racial issues that is happening here. So you, as the legal chorus of the department, because now I think there is a petition, they take the matter to court, and then you are supposed to advise the government if you were aware, if you are aware about the matter. If you are not, it's there in the senior official. You'll get it from them. If you are aware how far and what you know and how are you going to deal with this matter of the racial problem here in the Western Cape. I thank you, Chair.
Okay, that's one legal matter. Yeah, let's just put it. You want to put one and legal matter? Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to know from the department in terms of the legal, when the family of the inmate is claiming for their inmate that have killed inside in the center, that do they have those statistics of those females that used to do that, because it doesn't appear on our report. To Chair, I don't know whether it's going to them or whatever. I'm worried in terms of those inmates that get killed in our centers, because we don't get a clear report how is these people have been killed. If they said maybe the inmate was killed by the other inmate, it's not clear, Chairperson, that what are they doing about that person. For example, the one that you got it right now, I don't know whether I'm referring to the right people, Chair, in terms of the death of Kanyisa's brother. We were on the oversight. It was clear from Kanyisa's brother, from Kanyisa, that his brother was killed by the members. And the response that we've got today, I'm shocked that Kanyisa's brother was killed by other inmates. Is it the department running away with the truth of who's killing Kanyisa's brother? I'm worried about that, because the family also knows that his son was killed inside in the center by the officials. And the family also, they don't get not even a report. It's not only that one for Kanyisa. Sineyase Posmo, from 2006, if I'm not mistaken, that inmate was killed inside in the center by fire. Who burned that inmate inside in the center, and who is responsible for that inmate or Shelley a jail? When the family wants claims for that, how is the department dealing with that problem? Because that problem, Chair, I think is going to come even to you, because the family of POSMO also approached me to say, we've write a letter to the department, even to the minister, but until today, I'm not getting an answer. How was our brother get banned inside in the cell? So we're not getting clear report from the department. I'm worried, Chairperson, about all these cases. How is the legal doing about this? Even the members that do things that are wrong, we don't get not even one or two. At least he have gone to court. He have been arrested. we get abantaba suspendiwe. We sithola abantaba resignile because babalekela ama case. You know, we're dealing with criminals in our center and also deal with our own members that are criminals themselves, who are lying like inmate that lies in a prison. Thank you, Chairperson.
Right. Babakwan.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we're going to crowd you with issues because we're a bit lost. The issue that I'm raising are cases that are happening in our centers, particularly to offenders. And in my listening here, it seems as if I'm putting this question to wrong people. Will correct me if I'm wrong. Who is investigating those incidents if we are only dealing with corruption, fraud, and maladministration? Because to me, it seems as if the officials are investigating themselves, relying on the SAPS, if reported by who. The question is, who can report themselves to the SAPS to investigate those matters? That's one. Number two, the issue of officials getting monies from offenders. We hear some cases like that, that the inmates who have money and they give them to offenders. Do you investigate such cases as well? And how many have you been able to get into your hands? Thanks, sir.
Mr. Max, I'm just worried that we must not conflate the DIU with the legal. Because we're still going to deal with the DIU people, aren't we? Are we? Or can we put all of them together? I'm just... The special in the departmental investigation units. No, it's fine. So it's like I said, they'll buzzer respond. Okay, so there's nothing that's out of the way. Anything to do with... No, anything to do with legal or anything else, we will deal with. Let's put it all on there. It's fine. Baba, yes. Now, you'll take it, and then I'll ask one, and we'll take this round, and we'll have another round, because now we're opening it up for everything.
Yeah. Chairperson, you alluded to the fact of what about the 30 days? How do you people comply with the 30 days? But nobody responded to it. Now, it is an inescapable fact that the disciplinary hearings has been, the rules around it has been concluded sometimes in collective agreements and with certain time frames in which you have to conclude. Otherwise, there will be prescription. So with regard to these backlogs on paragraph 4 of your presentation, started with 181 and ended up to 148. How many of those is now, you know, according to prescription, not... valid to or eligible to be prosecuted, and why the difficulty to work those backlogs off? Thanks.
All right, last on this one, and we'll have another round. This one is more on the legal side. You know, we had a case here in Western Cape about the officials that had dreadlocks or beards or something, and we removed them. They went to court. They won that court case. The last document that I saw was saying the department must reinstate those people. I think it was the pop crew Lebatang. We are aware of that thing, are we? Are we aware of it? Okay, can you guys just talk to us on that matter in terms of that and all the other matters? There's now a ruling. What are you guys going to do about it? And the matters raised by all members. In any order, and any of you can respond to them.
Thank you, Chair. I'll only react to those that I'm aware of. The case, that dreadlock case, I'm aware of that one. The department were taking the matter on appeal. That other week, I can't remember the date now, I was here in Cape Town, consulting with our legal team. This week, or early next week, we'll be signing papers to petition the Supreme Court of Appeal, because the case is raising very serious issues about our dress code in the department. We cannot just accept any ruling without shafting it in such a way that it's acceptable. There is a certain guidance. I think the court will decide on that. So I cannot give more information on that, because then whether the Supreme Court of Appeal will agree with us is another matter. But you are taking that matter on appeal. That is the Ratanang case.
You've communicated that to Pop Crow and these people. I'm asking that question because they write to us. We must be in a position to say, at this point, we think that your lawyers must talk to the department's law. I'm just asking the question. You don't have to.
Okay.
I'm saying help us by doing that type of thing, because otherwise we become the post office for things that you guys could easily be resolving by saying, look, this thing we are appealing, don't even take it to the department, don't even take it to the committee. Well,
sorry, I just want to know whether a cost award was made in that particular case, and if so, what the quantum? There was a cost award. What was the cost award?
I can quickly check, but everything is suspended until the appeal is heard.
No, I think we understand.
Yes, I've got a judgment here. Let me just check. No, there's no cost award. Each party shall pay its own cost in the cross appeal. So that's what the judge ordered.
And he said
the department was the appellant.
As things stand now, before you're going to appeal, they must be reinstated. As the court judgment was saying, they must be reinstated. You are saying you're appealing that, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
In terms of the rule of court, when the judgment says reinstate, and then we lodge an application, that decision of the court is suspended until the decision of the court of appeal is there. So everything is suspended now.
That side of it, Bob. If you lost that appeal, you will then reinstate them, date it back to X, Y, and Z, isn't it? And then, of course, there will be cost implications and those type of things.
That's correct.
That's what we want to understand. We'll follow it up, and we'll be keen for you guys also to keep us up to breast on that one, because that is one of the matters that come to us all the time. So instead of if you keep us up to speed, we can immediately tell people that come to us to say, look, Lento is being taken care of. Can you respond to all the others?
Okay. I think the dreadlock case, I have responded. I've got no knowledge of this, the death and detention of Kanyisa brother. I can't give information on that. I don't know this matter. Yeah, okay.
Commissioner would have responded. We don't want to make you contradict the commissioner. All we are saying is just look at it and satisfy yourself that you guys are covered. I think that's what it is. You're saying you have not had any sighting on it. So commissioner would have spoken to whoever else. You are the legal guru. Have a look at it and just come back to us and say, look, we think we are in safe ground, without necessarily saying who commissioner is right or wrong or anything, because it will put you into trouble on that one. Will you do that for us, and then we'll bring that one back? Is that okay? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to refer to the issues of the time frames. The reference was made to 30 days. Time frame. That actually refers to after the disciplinary hearing has been concluded and the official appeal against either the guilty finding or sanction. That is where the 30 days come into play. That should be finalized within 30 days if all the documents are in. When it refers to the backlog of cases, there's not a specific time frame. Because we are dealing with issues of fraud and corruption, you cannot say this thing will be finalized in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It depends purely on the nature of that specific case. Some cases can take us up to 2 years, depending on where we have to look for information, what type of investigation. And that's why you'll find a backlog at the end of the financial year where people are still looking for information. And we don't also just want to close cases because of closing the case. If we need to look for information, we're going to do that, even if it takes us time. There's a further time frame. Once the departmental investigation unit refer the case to the code enforcement unit and the charges are approved by code enforcement unit after assessing the case, then we have 4 months to initiate the disciplinary hearing. And we don't have any cases that we had to withdraw because we are outside those time frames. I just wanted to make that clear. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, sir. Let me start off by officials getting money from offenders. Those cases we do investigate. I do not have the names here, but we can send that information, indication of how much money is involved and where these things are happening. I can confirm here that we have handled such cases. You find an inmate claiming that official has taken 50,000 out of my account. They start interacting, which is highly unethical. Inmate and official, go and withdraw 100 rand for me. I want to buy cigarettes. Now, this guy has got access into the account. He sees it. Then he starts withdrawing whatever is there. The time comes when he realizes that, no, my money is gone. And the only person who may have taken it is this official because I sent him with my card. They are not allowed to interact with inmates on that level. They must remain professional. Once it comes to our attention, it's a matter that we follow up and we view it in a very serious light. Sometimes they do say, go and pay my lawyers. Take this card. Go and withdraw 5,000, pay it over to attorney X. Also, that one is forbidden. You also have officials who are relatives of inmates. Now, they also want to take that family relation and utilize it in a facility setup, which is also not allowed. So, the other question related to cases that are happening in the center. We have a structure called a case management committee. That committee oversees cases relating to inmates, inmate to inmate, whatever is happening around and inside the center. That committee presides over issues relating to inmate. But whenever it inmate and officials, the relationship, whenever it gets out of hand, we are involved in the investigation. The next question, the deaths that are happening in our correctional facilities. Ourselves as legal, we are entrusted with good governance responsibility. In other words, if a death has occurred, we expect officials to come out clean and say everything that happened. But like you said, these people lie to you. You go there, they say, no, it was a gang activity, a related fight. You never get to hear a story. But once we were able to establish this fact that our officials were involved, it is not a matter that we would want to hide in reports or to oversight bodies. They need to know that we have a challenge of this nature and so that they can be able to assist. But wherever officials are found to have been involved, they must be criminally charged, they must be prosecuted externally as well as internally. The challenge here becomes how you collect information. What information comes to our disposal to interpret and to present in the form of report. Families claiming on inmates that are killed in our facilities. This one, Doc, will relate to if there are such cases that we have handled. But before he does that, I want to touch on the Western Cape issue of this racial matter.
We are a national department. We have taken note of the issues that were raised in the papers, even that those senior officials are taking us to court, which is a right at their disposal to exercise. The department's view is that we follow national equity targets. We are not saying we will not consider what are they saying, but whatever is being said must be aligned with the applicable laws in the country. We don't consider Western Cape in isolation. It is considered in conjunction with other regions of the department at a national perspective. But the department, if this matter comes to court, we are going to participate in that litigation. If we are not on agreeing terms on how equity targets should be interpreted and be applied. You'll also note that what is stated in the newspapers reflect that senior officials. Yes, indeed, the senior officials who have been promoted. We have directors. We have even a chief director. We will await to see how this matter unfolds, and I believe we'll also keep you updated on the development. Thank you.
Thank you, Shepherdson. The question that is not asked is yama families umndeni okuyukuthi ufake isikhalo sokuthi uyini bese jele wafela ejele akafanga ukuthi ugulile kepha ubulewe njengomndeni ke ongekho ngaphakathi kwesenda ibona iqiniso lonke balithola ngaphakathi kulaba bagada amabandla. So lo mndeni ufuna ukwazi ukuthi umuntu wabo ufe kanjani ngaphakathi. And uclaima kanjani. Sometimes we need to get that from the report. Ukuthi are the family do that. Baya claima na. Ukuthi umuntu wami ushonele ngaphakathi ejele. And bese baya claima. I'm saying this to a person. There's a complaint that is going to come to us. And it's big. Whereby the inmate is going to claim, want a claim, is going to ask the claim from the department, and it's a big money. I don't want to talk about it because now the report is not in front of me, but it's coming. That inmate is claiming for being staying inside in the center longer than the sentence that he was supposed to. So kuningi sibhekane nako okuyikuthi i-department yona ayibheki. And this thing in our constituency ziyeza kuthi. And another problem esikhostelwa yilokhu, Chairperson, I'm not saying this is from the department. We've got this civil society that we're working with, whereby a civil society can make a book without consulting the department, and produce that book inside in our centers, and our inmate knows all the rights for them more than umuntu ongaphandle. And that civil society also, the case also is also coming, because he have made that book. That book is published. I'm waiting for it. Since that things are when the evidence you would. Nile le book and any corner of my centers eight. And we are sure every day in our center. But no one take this book and said then what if una langa part center, because even the minister doesn't know about that book. Therefore, that case is going to come according to that book, because lesiboshwa sifundile lencwadi zabona amalungelo aso sayenza ama claims sayenza yonke into. They're waiting to get that money from the department. I don't know how are they going to deal with that problem. So, Chetasin, a second question that I want to know in terms of smuggling, it's a criminal chain. When we go to oversight, we did get this complaint that some of our officials that are smuggling data inside our centers. And to me, hey, smuggling data is a criminal case. I don't get not even a single report that shows that there is a member that has been arrested in terms of smuggling data. So I want you to know from the legal, what are they doing about this case of the members that are smuggling data inside in the center? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, I'm happy because the legal gurus, seemingly they are aware about what is happening here in the Western Cape. But I don't know. But if this has been done by the senior official, creating the problem, or not creating the problem per se, but seemingly that they turn against their own department and they are senior officials. And then we said, no, we are still waiting for the court to call us. We'll deal with them when the matter is in the court. But now you are aware that the senior official in this province, what they are doing. And then you mean that there is any way that we are going? And then there is any way where we go? Because this thing has been, if the senior official has done such matters and is perpetrating such matters, there is a problem. I'm in the position of even the bank account where the senior official opened that account and put their own money and said, this is the equity account. And those people, they are supposed to lead the institution. And then how can we do on that? We can't say we'll go to get the matter when the matter was in court. And actually, we were even not aware about the matter unless we make our own research and get the whole information. And this thing has happened here. So, to me, I don't see the department is doing justice on this matter. Something must be happening. You can't just be leading and turn against the institution that you lead. To me, that is totally unacceptable. Secondly, this year is another question, Chair. This year, I think 5 months back, there was those people who released. Those people who released in prison, they were sentenced, and they go to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and then their matter, I forget because I don't have any details now. I'm in a position of bringing it if it's necessary. They find that in the Truth Commission, their case was not political. I'm aware you know that. Their case was not politically. But only to find that, no, those people, they didn't do anything. They were innocent. And then they were released. But we don't have any information. We don't have any information. We get it from books. We get it that there are two people. There are people who released. And then, I don't know, those people, they were thinking that they were involved in killing whosoever, but I do have the document. But they simply been released, without our notification. Okay, not notification. They were not maybe supposed to know that, but we were supposed to be aware because we are part and parcel of this department. Something happened in this department, we have to know. But we get it from the papers that there are these people, and now we know, I know, that they're going to claim the department for staying more than 19 years while they didn't do anything. And then it's where the matters will come back to Parliament and said, no, you were supposed to. And that's that. So I don't know. If you are aware about that, please tell us that there is this thing that has been happened, and then so, and it was funded by this and this and this. So we just simply getting this information in papers. No, I take it, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, Mr. Sal.
Thank you very much. I hope I didn't understand the previous question to mean that people cannot access their rights in courts of law in South Africa. But I'll leave that at that stage. There are two further questions that I would like to just follow up on. The first was, I asked a question about learnerships and recruitment of legal capacity, which wasn't answered. And secondly, I'd just like a little bit more clarity on what is being asked for in terms of the proposal to amend the Correctional Services Act in relation to provide the department, that presumably the DIU, with additional powers to access, for example, bank accounts and cell phone numbers. And because, I mean, this is obviously has privacy issues and even constitutional privacy issues. And I want to know what it is exactly that the department is contemplating asking us to grant them by the way of an amendment to the Act.
All right. Just to add on the capacity one, Mr. Self limited it to the legal, but I want to broaden it out also even to the DIU. And I'm broadening it out because earlier on in the presentation, some of the limitations were the capacity limitations. And yet last year you cancelled the SIU's contract for some reason or the other. You can't come and complain about capacity, and then when there is government capacity, whether it's the ministry, whether it's the department, again, if you can't answer it, that is why you are here, because you represent the organization. I'm saying don't complain about capacity and refuse capacity. So when I say, when you talk about the capacity for Mr. Self around legal, just add that one to it. The one I want to ask specifically to the DIU is, you know, we're very concerned that your capacity constraints are going to embarrass us even more than the Laratong matter that we had the other day with the correctional services official and the SAPS person. We went to Rustenburg. There was a clear case of sexual harassment. Had we not pursued that thing as portfolio committee, that matter would not have been resolved. And yet there was DIU involvement from the beginning. Last week we asked Ubaba Makakula and Mamnyanda to go to Bethel. Again, there was DIU involvement. DIU came back and found only the female guilty of sexual harassment. Only the female guilty of sexual harassment. And this is a female secretary and a male head of center. Only the female is guilty of sexual harassment. DIU investigation, DIU recommendation. We sent them to go and do a follow-up. Our report that we received from them is that when they did their own follow-up, it became clear that the head of the center was as complicit in this matter. Now, I'm raising this thing because DIU, we cannot be doing the hands-on DIU business about it. They went there, it was complicit. We have asked senior management, I think last week when they were here, just to do that follow-up. But we're raising it with you guys because it's what you guys are supposed to be doing. We've got the documents where it says DIU should have been doing this type of thing. So, again, we're all on the same side. But we do want to make sure that when we write our report that we are quite comfortable that the department has the capacity to do its work, whether it is to defend the taxpayers' money, whether it's to do service delivery, whether it's to root out corruption, all those type of things. So we're on your side, but we have to say to you where we pick up things that are wrong. So maybe you must, we've given it to somebody, I'm not sure, I'm sure we gave it to the acting regional, Zongelanga, and thing. Please go and look at that thing, because we think you didn't do a proper job. If you take the report from Makakula and company, if you need to talk to them, we think the job was not well done. And then, Baba, we are aware that that there is a unit being set up that is being run by Kwinamuzi, or being set up by Kwinamuzi around anti-gang or whatever the case might be. But the prevalence of contraband in ourselves, cell phones, you yourself were saying, I'm surprised you were saying that somebody says, here's my thing, go and do it for me, instead of arresting that person that he was doing it. You were saying that to us. I mean, it's just crazy that an official, well, first of all, inmates have got cell phones. We know it. We'll give you their numbers. We'll even give you, they become so bold, these chaps, that they send us pictures. Guti, here am I, chairperson, for proof. I've got SMS pictures here of people in that area, Mpumalanga. Takes a picture of himself in the cell, he sends it to me as proof. Guti, they've got these things in their cell. So we know the cell phone. We know that there's lots of money. We know that there's lots of drugs and things that are happening. Lots. We're not exaggerating. We know there's lots of these things happening. And you are the guy that have to find a way of rooting this thing out, gentlemen. I mean, we have gone as far as saying, we don't understand why you guys just don't block, for instance, the airways for cell phones. And Nina, as officials, must use landlines. The resistance is coming from you, because if we block that thing, how are you going to phone your friend? Well, not as the official. We're saying block it, officials must use landlines or go and phone outside. I don't understand what is the difficulty in that. Otherwise, how are you going to be able to deal with the cell phones? Because you're never going to get rid of them in the cells. We just think you guys must become creative and proactive, as Makakula saying. We can't wait until these things come up. So the reason for our calling was, one, to highlight to you and get clarity on the issues that we want, but two, to begin to make sure that we all work as a team. We do oversight. Most of these things that you heard today were first-hand experiences that our members are picking up, not reading in the newspaper. So-and-so phoned me. I was in this area. I was in that area. We talk sometimes, so Tom Moyani and them, it might not come directly to you guys. We are now talking to you as a commissioner, so that you also are able to give input when you have your management meeting. We'll do the same with IT tomorrow. So, yeah, please respond to those questions. If there are any challenges, please raise them, so that when we talk to Moyani and company and in our own report, we are able to say, don't give money to IT, give money to DIU. Or don't give money to admin, give money to security. It's that type of thing. Don't tell us you've got a challenge. I mean, don't go away from here if you've got a challenge and expect that it's going to be resolved. So, in this closing round, please respond to Mam Ngwenya's readiness to defend the department, whether it's debts, whether it is unlawful detention, because she says there's quite a few coming. Are you ready? Is there a strategy? Then there's the issue of the smuggling of Dacha. Nobody has ever said to any one of us, there's ex official who is now an inmate because he was caught smuggling Dacha. Nobody has said that to us. The proactiveness, we can't wait for the court to pronounce on a matter that we are clearly aware of being perpetuated by senior members. That was the question by Honorable Makakula. Is there something we're doing about it? We're talking about the Western case. You also, I suppose, Makagule, you're talking about the Kronstadt too when you're talking about the Truth and Reconciliation. Yes. That we are aware that the two gentlemen, I think they were in Kronstadt, were released through everybody else. I think the point that he was raising, and I'm, if you can't answer it again, it's fine. But the department as a whole should have at least kept us informed about that matter. But his one is also, what happens if those two gentlemen take us to court for unlawful detention? That's 19 years or something like that. And then, of course, Mr. Sal spoke about the capacity. What is your strategy, one, of recruitment, but I think also of retention? Both legal, because both of you guys in your reports indicate that there's capacity constraints, both in the legal and in the investigation and enforcement unit, if you can answer that one. And also, what is it exactly that you're asking us for when you're asking for additional powers for the PIU? What exactly is it that you are asking us for? Those are the specific questions that we'd like you to respond to. And then we'll also afford you an opportunity to say whatever else you want to say, because it's not every day that you come here, but the senior people come here. In any order, and any of you can respond to those questions.
Thank you, sir. I'll start with the prevalence of contraband. It is a challenge in our centers. Even the statistics will confirm that. The issue of Daha cell phones, it is true as you said it. As I speak, we are dealing with a case somewhere in Gauteng. Our official would search this inmate, take their whatever he gets. It would be Daha, it would be cell phones, it would be money. But what he does not record all of those. He just puts them in a locker. As to what happened, he couldn't tell us what is he doing with all these things not registered, whether he sells back to them or he uses the Daha that he takes. But we found him with stacks of notes of about 3,000 rands. He also couldn't explain. They said he searches them and takes whatever money is on them. Whatever cell phones he gets, he takes them. But it's a matter that we are dealing with. We have noted from the chairperson that we need to be proactive and creative around these areas. The matter of Bethel, I have seen the report prepared by your committee to the department. I must indicate that we got to know about the issues that affected the lady as at the conclusion of the case she was facing. Hence, we only addressed the part that she played. But once we learned that she was making certain allegations, abuse of power, sexual issues there, we are investigating the head of center. This matter should be concluded very soon, and we'll give you a report to that effect. Rustenburg. At Rustenburg, it's more or less the same. There was a report implicating the complainant, first in January. Then it transpired that the complainant was assisting in exposing how things were not being dealt properly or according to policy in that management area. She even revealed these issues of sexual harassment where the implicated manager was dismissed. I learned that at arbitration he was reinstated, but the department is taking the matter on review that he must stay dismissed. Section 205, to answer Mr. Self's question of what is it that we want. I will give an example that last week on Friday, it came to our attention that
one of our officials has transferred almost close to half a million into his bank account or some fictitious bank account. So this 205, we is meant to access such, it won't be abused contrary to the provisions of the Constitution, but to enable us to get to the root without delay of these issues that are challenging us. In this case, because we had our colleagues from SIU also participating, and also SAPS, we managed to map out what was happening as on Friday, such that this guy was immediately charged. He confessed everything. As I speak, he's busy implementing the whole syndicate. He's going to tell us who is from outside and who is from inside and who is there in other departments. So this section 205 is merely to say we want to be quicker in getting this information. We can still get it through SAPS, but it takes a little bit of time. And it won't be abused such that you listen to people's communication, you retrieve information that people were talking about unlawfully. Mr. Magagula raised a certain crucial issue of senior officials going on the offensive against the department, where they should be taking the lead in protecting the interest of the department. I did not want to indicate that aspect because we don't want to be seen to be trampling on people's rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution. What we are doing, we are monitoring the conduct thereof. If this conduct becomes incompatible with the direction the department is taking, then we speak of another scenario of fact, which will no longer be a matter or a subject of litigation, but it becomes a subject of not conducting yourself properly. But we don't want to do that and send a message that say we don't acknowledge and appreciate that people have got constitutional rights, they can approach courts and have their disputes deliberated. But having said that, I still indicate that should it transpire that there is conduct which is not compatible with the direction and everything that the department is taking such that it can be interpreted to be misconduct, then appropriate actions will be taken. We have the issue of people who stay for longer such that they can come and claim unlawful detention from the department. Sometimes a person who has been convicted but filed an appeal, you find that at appeal he gets released. That release warrant is not communicated back to the department on time, or is just not communicated at all by those who are there. Now it's Department of Justice, it's ourselves, and it's SAPS somewhere in the middle. And it becomes a very difficult setup. In such instances, we find that there is no defense except to say, no, it's not us, but justice. But this person will say, no, I've stayed in your facility. This is what I'm claiming to be paid. Then it becomes an issue of settlement. How much is reasonable to be paid over to this person? Because indeed it's true that he was in for the time that he was supposed to be out. I spoke about issues of smuggling of Daha. We will follow up on the statistics because
statistics relating to smuggling of Daha would be included in the statistics of misconduct. But the specific question was, do these people get prosecuted criminally? Because possession and dealing are both criminal offenses. And the bigger picture about the Daha that is smuggled, it gets sold into the inmate, then the inmates get out of control. That's when we experience this activities which can be interpreted as gang-related, because these people are under the influence of the contraband that shall have smuggled. And once you have smuggled something like Daha or whatever you have been smuggling, they are in a position to manipulate you further. They can say, no, you have been giving me this for a year now, but now I need a firearm. I don't need this. And if you don't bring it, I'm going to expose you. Once that thing is in, it causes us so much hardship, because lives will be lost, mostly innocent lives, people who do not participate in this contraband activities. But I think that the establishment of this section, which is under Mr. Ntlagano, is going to help us a lot in collecting information of what is really happening on the ground. We need to know about that. Without that intelligence, we are not able. Not that we are replacing the intelligence agencies, but it's just merely to collect information that is going to enable us to operate better and effectively. The recruitment strategy and learnership, can I leave it to our HR?
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. As discussed last week in this very meeting, Chairperson, we are working on a robust recruitment and retention strategy. We are experiencing currently challenges around the OSD. He mentioned the fact that they are unable to attract legal officers because of the salaries. We have actually escalated this matter to the level of the National Commissioner and the Minister, because what happens is that we first give the official salaries. On completion, you find that the PSA actually says they must be in the queue. They must be, if posts are advertised, they can't just be automatically absorbed into those positions. And we've actually written to the Minister and the National Commissioner to have a discussion with their counterparts to actually unblock this for us, because it makes recruitment and retention of the scarce skills quite a challenge, because we identify those in terms of our needs as the department. But on completion, you find that a correctional officer gets paid more than a social worker or a legal officer. And there's no incentive really to actually take the new career if you are going to be paid more in terms of OSD as a correctional officer than you would be in terms of the scarce skills. And this is a serious challenge. That's why we've escalated it to the level of the our principals, so that they are able to interact with their counterparts. Like we promised, we will be submitting that robust recruitment and retention strategy that we discussed last week. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Issa. Chair, there is one thing you have touched on, the us saying we don't have capacity, but we refused the SIU involvement. I can just indicate that we
We had issues about funding the contract. But also in addition, there were certain cases that were outstanding which needed to be closed or to be closed up to say this contract has come to an end and this is all the feedback. The cases were around fronting by several, the number of service providers. It came to our attention recently that although I need not say this because I'm not SIU, but Treasury has released certain funds to enable them to assist government departments who are in need of their skill and expertise. So we will take that up with our principals just to facilitate that interaction once more. Thank you.
You're all welcome there. And we'll assist you if you need political assistance from our side. Mr. Malati and your team, thank you very much, man. We'll continue to call you guys. It might not take a year before we call you guys back again. It might be at more regular intervals. But we'll continue to call you. We'll continue to call the IT department for a similar type of thing because these are the areas that we think over and above the national picture we need to zoom in on. The abuse of our facilities, both by inmates and by officials, can't continue. And you guys have to be in the forefront of that. The abuse of taxpayers' money or the lack of proper usage of it in terms of IT. We spend billions of rands on IT, and every year we're told they're unable to do this. Cindy can't even get a proper email because his servers are down. We'll zoom in on them on those type of things. So it's not just going to be the quarterly senior managers. Occasionally we'll call yourselves in. But thank you very much. I should have said it at the beginning of the meeting. Information that I had at my disposal at last night was that the national commissioner was admitted into hospital and he was quite ill. He was quite ill, and he had indicated that because he wanted to be here, but I got a report that he was very ill, and he was in hospital. So from our side, if you guys see him, please pass our well wishes. Get well soon. We have sent him an SMS to that effect, but we recording his apologies, Cindy, that he's in Belgrade, Yevel, or somewhere hospital, but also that we are thinking about him and get well soon. So we will see IT tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and then on Thursday, hopefully, we can wrap our business up. Thank you very much, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Bye-bye.